Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. Dan and JJ are here in absolute awestruck, sometimes dejected, sometimes celebratory fashion for you. Bills Mafia, after what can only be described as a jaw-dropping 41-40 victory over the Baltimore Ravens in Highmark Stadium / Rich Stadium / Ralph Wilson Stadium, the last home opener of the entire era for that stadium. And couldn't have asked for a bigger or more exciting game for that to kick off this 2025 season. How are you doing?
Yeah, I still don't know that last night was real, JJ. I'm not going to lie. And it was reminiscent of so many Bills comeback moments where, you know, I think back to the Frank Reich game against the Houston Oilers, and Andre Reed was on Instagram, you know, posting about this. And how I remember even watching that game, I was a kid, I was asking my parents, like, why is everybody leaving? My dad and my uncles were like, because the Bills suck. That's why. That's why everyone's leaving. We're sick of this team.
And
that's right. Yeah. They don't got a safety. They don't got nothing. And then, like, flash forward, you know, 30 some odd years, me and you and our text chain, which is notoriously pessimistic,
yeah,
kind of in the same vein, right? Even though we weren't at the game, we had mentally left the game, and we were ready, I think, to run this front office and coaching staff like absolutely overboard. Well, and that, and then Josh Allen happens, man.
Josh Allen.
Yeah. Josh Allen is the deodorant on all porous defenses. Yeah. You know, what can we say?
On a stink fest otherwise. And I think you're right. I know if the Bills had, if just like one of the last 5 minute plays that went in the Bills' favor went in a different direction and the Bills lost this game 38-40 or, like, you know, even lesser of a score, it would be fire Sean McDermott today. You know, it would be fire Sean McDermott. He tried 3 2-point conversions. They all failed. Fire Joe Brady. He was running weird whip screens to the outside through the middle of the game, causing 3 and outs. Fire Brandon Bean. He can't pick anybody who's a good receiver. You know, it would have been bedlam in Buffalo, and, you know, everything would have been on the table. Sean McDermott can't coach a defense. They were, like, too predictable on offense. All of those things, all of those cards would have been on the table. We would have heard all of the cacophony of echoing comments again. And some of that criticism is absolutely 100% deserved. And yet Josh Allen, right? Like,
Saves the day.
When people asked me my honest opinion of the Bills' chances against the Ravens, I even think I said it on the pod. If Josh Allen plays an MVP level game and somehow the Bills cause the Ravens to make some mistakes, they will win. But if the Ravens play a perfectly clean game, they will dominate. And most of the game, the Ravens played perfectly clean and dominated.
Yeah, no, it's amazing how much stuff we predicted would happen in this game that actually happened. This was a Zay Flowers game. This was a Derrick Henry game. The defense didn't have any answers for Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson. We knew that the Bills were going to play man coverage at a high clip, which they did at about 41%. We knew they were going to blitz Lamar, but Lamar's really good against the blitz. He was 7 for 9, 140 yards, and a TD pass against the Buffalo Bills blitz. Everything we said would happen happened, and yet Josh Allen, you know, Josh Allen is the answer to a lot of how we wrap our heads around last night, but also too, man, I mean, we've been asking for star performances on the defensive side of the ball for so long, and you and I have talked about numerous scenarios where we're like, you know what, if it's 35-35, because you're never going to shut out the Chiefs, you're never going to shut out the Bengals, you're never going to shut out the Ravens, teams that know your scheme so well, but when can we get a dude on the other side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball, to finally turn in a game-tilting star performance to help us get it over the hump? And yesterday, that was Ed Oliver, right? That defense for the Buffalo Bills played bad, and I'm sure we're going to break it down, but flowers to Ed Oliver for turning in what was an absolute star performance on the defensive side. And a game where, like we have described so many times, the Bills' defense was utterly futile, but in high leverage moments, someone had to step up, and that person was Ed Oliver on a multitude of occasions. Whatever we're going to say about the defense here, folks, please know that Ed Oliver is exempt. That was a all-pro star performance he turned in yesterday from his pressure rate, on Lamar Jackson. Of course, the highlight play of punching out the ball from Derrick Henry's massive arms, right? Cole Bishop probably owes Ed Oliver, I think, steak dinner or something to that effect, because the lasting memory on the defensive side of the ball is going to be Oliver creating that fumble against Henry and not Henry running 20 miles an hour and absolutely ragdolling Cole Bishop on his way to the end zone. So all the things we've been asking for on the defensive side of the ball, we got it. And we got it from a guy who has largely been under discussed this offseason. You know, in all this defensive line shuffle, people forgot to kind of talk about Ed Oliver and the fact that he's been a staple of this interior for so long. When the lights were brightest, here when his team needed him the most, didn't matter that they had given up 40 points at that point, and Ed Oliver absolutely made miracles happen.
I think that the entire defensive front seven, all the linemen and the linebackers, should actually buy Cole Bishop and Taylor Rapp steak dinners for the amount of times that their leaky gap play let a full speed 250-pound, 6'4" Derrick Henry running a 4.3 40 truck into that secondary. It's a train on the tracks at that point. You cannot expect a safety. It almost doesn't matter who that safety is back there. You cannot count on them to come up and tackle that guy in those situations. And it was a lot of it was on bad run fits on the front end. A lot of it was on the Bills' unwillingness. This was one of my biggest criticisms of this defense, as we're just kind of getting into the defense. One of my biggest criticisms is the fact that they played just like gap responsibility defense with absolutely no flavor on it. It was a cup of vanilla soft serve ice cream, and the Ravens were just eating it up. There was like, oh, we're going to do gap sound with the second level filling, and we're not going to do any run blitzes, no run stunts. They basically only were reserving blitzes for during definite passing downs, and otherwise were playing basic flavorless defense. I didn't see anything on the defensive line play. Granted, I haven't watched all 22 yet. That just came out today. Haven't had time, but based on just the kind of broadcast watch, it was an easily predictive defense. Mm-hmm. And I think too that we talked about how, you know, on the onset, if the Bills lose this game, it's like, oh, McDermott should be fired, Bean should be fired, everyone should be fired, let's start over, this isn't going to get it done. This game also is the kind of thing that's a totem for the coaching staff and the players to point to and say, this is why you never quit, this is why you never give up. And that actually does indicate that they're receiving a proper level of coaching from Sean McDermott. Just the fact that John Harbaugh's Ravens, who he's lauded as one of the two or three best coaches in the league, they were like celebrating on the sideline at 40-25. Like they had the thing in the bag. They took their foot off the gas. His coordinators started coaching in conservative clock kill type of ways. And that's all the Bills needed. That's that little window of time, that little gap in aggressiveness.
JJ, we talked about how coaching was going to matter in this game. The Ravens have blown game after game like this in recent memory. I mean, they are the most well-balanced, maybe sound team in the league, and yet they always have these weird moments where they come up short for a variety of different reasons. It's just they find ways to lose these games, and this is the position I think the Bills were in, we felt like, so many years ago, where we just found weird ways to lose games. That Jacksonville Jaguars game from, God, what was that, 2022, 2023, yep. the 9-6 game, one of Urban Meyer's few wins. Two seasons ago, Mac Jones, one and only fourth quarter comeback drive in his career against the Buffalo Bills. I believe that was that in Highmark? I think that was in Highmark, right? Yeah, I mean, it's the Bills are we as Bills fans are very familiar with the Bills losing games like that in exactly that type of fashion. So we can empathize with the Ravens. I mean, the problem for me is that the Ravens, dude, they're completely loaded. That is a star-studded cast from top to bottom on both sides of the ball. They've had coaching continuity for what feels like decades now with Harbaugh. They've got stars all up and down that roster. They draft well. They sign well. They manage their cap well. And yet, despite all of those things, when the moment is its biggest, this is a team that finds a new way to come up short. I'm not trying to sell the Bills short in this particular situation, but is like an objective observer and not a fan who is giddy about what happened yesterday. Like, if you're a Ravens fan sitting at home today, you got to be like, what do we got to do? Right.
What else could we have done?
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, a 0.09% chance for the Bills to win this game on ESPN win predictor analytics with 4 minutes left. And yet they pulled it out.
Yeah. With 5 minutes left, you know, what was it? 0-717 in NFL history. Teams trailing by 15 or more points with 5 minutes or less left in the fourth quarter since 2017. 0-717. Now it's 1-717. So
terrible stat. Terrible stat to hang on the Ravens. Yeah.
1-718 times that's happened. And it happened to them last night. They squant. It's so interesting because I think the narrative is going to be that they squandered the lead. I would argue, and not just as a fan, but as a football, you know, somebody who analyzes football, the Bills snatched it from them. Mm-hmm. They did not squander. I mean, they could have probably coached a little bit more aggressive. They could have done some different things and not been so conservative. You know, they're punting on fourth down. I don't think Andy Reid would have punted that ball.
It was a surrender. I felt like they were surrendering at that point.
I feel like he would have gone for it and said, if they get the ball back, or if we give this over on downs and they kick a field goal and go ahead, we have time. Like, we want to control our destiny. They didn't do that. They punted it away, you know, and Sean McDermott after the game was asked that direct question. He said, you know, it's really sort of a toss up. Any coach in the league is going to see it both ways and have a sense, you know, in the moment you got to make that kind of on a gut call. And I think that was one. So yeah, I think there's some choices they made that indicate squandering a lead, but for the most part, the way that the Bills executed in those final 5 minutes, they took it. They just claimed it. They claimed that victory from the jaws of defeat.
Mercilessly targeting a Jair Alexander, who, I mean, listen, is a great, great DB.
Oh my gosh.
I think we wanted him, right?
But yeah, super talented.
Yeah, super talented. He's a great scheme fit for the Ravens. Like, not a guy you thought the Bills would go after, but they did. They went after him when Palmer was on him, when mm-hmm. Coleman was on him, because they could see that he wasn't up to snuff yet in this scheme. And that's the transition that I loved. And I credit Josh more with that than Joe Brady for reading what was on the field in front of him and making some of those aggressive decisions. Because a lot of that, listen, Joe Brady probably going to be a head coach after the end of this season. Love Joe Brady and everything he brings to the table. Big caveat. That being said, though, some of that play calling early on in the game, it's like he anticipated that the O-line was going to lose its battles to the Baltimore Ravens defensive line. I mean, tight end bubble screens like to Dalton Kincaid. I mean, Keon Coleman had a couple of screen passes as well, one he dropped. Those are not the two guys that I would factor into the screen game, but he was trying to work up the quick game for Josh. Mm-hmm. And Josh was like, you know what? Second half of the game in particular, he just slowed everything down. Happy to buy time with his legs when the line didn't hold up. Happy to stay in the pocket when he saw his protection was good, and targeted the boundaries where you didn't think the Bills were going to be able to go. And he let some of these wide receivers, Palmer, we can debate if he had a good game or not, but he definitely had a clutch.
He had a
clutch
great fourth quarter.
Right. Yep. Great fourth quarter. Yep. Right. And made some of that Mac Hollins veteran play stuff, drawing that DPI in the second half as well.
Yep.
But then he allowed his guys to rise to the occasion with him. And I love that. And that's what Josh does. He makes guys better. So it was the aggression that they showed. They went out to win it, not try to like eke it out. And I think they absolutely deserve the outcome that they got, especially after that second half of play.
Yep. Well, and I think too, you know, again, just sticking with the defense for a second, Lamar Jackson has the best QB rating in the league right now, 144. Derrick Henry has the most rushing yards in the league right now with 169. Zay Flowers has the most receiving yards in the league right now with 143. So painful. And none of it was okay. None of it was good enough because Josh Allen leads the league and accumulated yet another game with two rushing and two passing touchdowns minimum, making him, again, the NFL leader in all of history with games of that number hits his seventh time. So
wild.
And to your point before about John Harbaugh, he has lost 8 games when leading in the fourth quarter by at least 8 points since 2000. That's the most. That's the most that any coach in the league has lost.
Yes. And for you Bills fans being like, well, McDermott has lost his fair share. I believe the Bills are only second on that list with two in that same time frame.
Right. Yeah. 2-8 Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So if you think in, and Harbaugh's still employed.
I know, right? He owes a lot to Lamar for saving his job when they drafted him. But yeah,
oh yeah, they were about to move on from him. He got the Joe Flacco Super Bowl, and then he like didn't do anything for a few years.
They were like, "I think we're ready. I think we're done with this Harbaugh." Yeah. But God, that's gotta be hurt so bad if you're a Ravens fan.
Oh like, my just, gosh,
I know. Yeah. God, we've been there, Ravens fan. We've been there. We totally understand.
We understand that we are the Chiefs.
Yeah.
You also have the Chiefs, so it's double insult. But
So JJ, we have I think celebrated in a gentlemanly fashion without gloating, but there were definitely some concerns here for the Bills. And I understand that you're scaling up the level of competition relative to what they may face, you know, in the division and in the coming weeks when you talk about the Ravens. But man, this defense looked bad. And it didn't look like they needed one safety. It looked like they needed two safeties. Now, you brought up a really good point. The defensive line did not hold up their end in the run game at all. But I mean, dude, even in coverage, it was a rough night.
I'm just saying, if any cornerback or safety is trying to tackle a running back who makes it to them untouched, that's not a safety problem.
Yes.
That is definitely not a safety problem. That is linebackers. People, we already said Ed Oliver for the abysmal defensive performance. Ed Oliver gets a pass. Joey Bosa gets a pass. I thought Christian Benford also looked solid, right? Like he had the third most tackles on the team. Mm-hmm. So he was saving a lot of plays. His coverage, he lost Zay Flowers a few times, and that was surprising because you don't see that. And I wonder how much of that could be laid at the feet of the safeties or Dorian Strong, right? Because the combination coverages that the Bills play in their zone defense and even in their man, there's a lot of handoffs. And I saw a lot of handoffs being messed up in the back end. So
they could not communicate. They were having a really hard time communicating about those things pre-snap.
I have some faith that this team, who always has a terrible defense, is going to not be any better. So I was trying to go positive there, but I'm very worried.
You were staging a vociferous defense of the secondary where I'm ready to go pull Justin Simmons and Jabril Peppers off the scrap heap right now.
Yeah.
You know what? I want to talk about Benford. They kind of went after him in coverage, right? Like DeAndre Hopkins has no business getting past a DB as talented as Benford. And we're going to see it again, I think, this week with Garrett Wilson. Some of Benford's worst games have been against Garrett Wilson. I just think when you go dude for dude, right, and you got to win a one-on-one matchup, no one is putting Benford on an island, right? No one is like giving him the Sauce Gardner treatment, the Darrell Revis treatment. They are happy to go after him when they feel like they have a talent advantage against him.
Yeah. There are 16 wide receivers in this league who will not struggle to beat Christian Benford. Correct. They're not probably going to catch a ball and run for a bunch of extra yards. He's going to be tight. He's going to give them some business. He's not going to give them a clean release ever. But there's probably like a 15 to 17 wide receivers who I could line up on a spreadsheet and be like, these are the ones who are going to beat Christian Benford.
Yeah,
be able
without
to.
A doubt.
Because there's a reason he's a sixth round pick. He has some athletic limitations. He has some traits that are not elite. And so, I agree that. But I don't think DeAndre Hopkins is of the caliber that he should be beating Christian Benford. So I agree with that.
That was an incredible catch by
D-Hop. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, incredible catch. But yes, I think, everyone is ready to get rid of Cole Bishop and Taylor Rapp today. Everyone's ready to go sign Stephon Gilmore to play CB2. I think you offer a very sober, though, and rational analysis of why the DBs, looked bad on broadcast, but it was because of a more holistic failure on that defense, which brings me to the defensive line. And outside of Ed Oliver, what specifically did you see that would give you maybe a kernel of optimism moving forward here? Cause like it was all bad most of the time for that D line.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, Greg Rousseau had some flashes that he is going to be what we've always known him to be, as a excellent run defender who will also be pretty solid in pass rush situations, especially high leverage pass rush situations. The problem was other teams know it, and they were comfortable, especially against TJ Sanders, Deion Walker, Daquan Jones, and even Joey Bosa to some regard, and especially AJ Bonessa. They were happy to just single all those people and use, especially with the gap power scheme that the Ravens often run and zone reads and all of that, they were happy to just be like, okay, we're going to either give help to somebody who's blocking Greg Rousseau, or we're going to double him straight up and make that the point of attack. And he is a lanky guy. He's not super stout. And so that is his kryptonite, is when you get two very, very large people pushing him, or you use a tight end, like tight end trap on the end to pin him in, pin pull stuff. Like he can't get off of it. He's not super dense. He's not powerful enough to like split the gaps, because he's also so tall. So I worried about that. I think that he's talented enough to do well, but it's really, his game is 100% dependent on Ed Oliver, Daquan Jones, Deion Jones, or Deion Walker, mm-hmm. TJ Sanders. It's dependent on those guys demanding at least one of them be double teamed, mm-hmm. because he can do a lot of amazing things, but only over one-on-one. Joey Bosa looked like he was shaking off some rust. He got better as the game went on.
Yeah, I really liked, and you know, Collinsworth did a really good job calling it out. I really liked the adjustments that Bosa made to some of the big ass bites he was taking misdirection game.
Everybody saw it. Yeah,
but that's what a high end veteran will do for you, right? He'll make those adjustments in game, and I thought he had a really good one. Listen, I mean, it was not a lot of these guys played in the preseason either, because they were banged up or they weren't healthy. And I think that has to factor into some of it as well. We cannot overstate, these are probably two of the three best teams in the AFC. Yeah. And this was a super physical game for week one. We're going to look at the tape, and there was a lot of bad tape this defense put out there. But I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater. We've been saying for years, how come McDermott doesn't play the young guys, right? How come he doesn't let them take their lump? They took a ton of lumps yesterday. And because they've got a polished professional alien at quarterback on the offensive line, that's going to buy those guys, I think, a longer time to develop and a longer time to hit that growth curve that we need them to hit. So it is game one of 17. The defense looked bad, but I would exercise patience before you start playing fantasy football out on the waiver wire and seeing what overpriced vets we can bring in, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a question. It's like you said, that between the safeties, certainly the corners, and definitely the defensive line, everybody playing together wasn't a thing for any appreciable amount of the preseason. They don't have reps together. They don't all have reps together. So,
and you could tell from all that miscommunication. Yeah. Oh my God.
And it's going to take a minute. And especially because I think that Dorian Strong, being one, a rookie, and two, then getting the start against the Ravens and against the root technician like Zay Flowers, he was just getting his lunch eaten all day. But he did come up and tried to lay a lick on Derrick Henry a few times and came out with a couple of tackles. So he wasn't terrible. There's things to like about him. It's a lot to be said that there are players like Jamarcus Ingram on this roster who have been in the system, and he did not get replaced throughout the whole game. So
yes. The coaching staff is letting these guys take their lumps.
And I think, to your point, that's something that we've been super critical of McDermott for in the past. But yeah, he kind of stuck with his men in this one and gave them a chance.
Yep.
I would very much like to see way less of AJ Epinesa. His limited snaps were very poor.
Yes. Yes. He did not much value added in this particular game.
He is not a player that you... Like, he's literally an unplayable option against the Ravens. Mm-hmm. He does not. Like, we've seen him against the Ravens in multiple matchups. He's never been the AJ Epinesa that we're like, oh, man, all right, that was a good play. And never once. Like, he just gets completely destroyed.
He does. That's a dude that the Bills have given plenty of runway to develop and grow. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk of, you know, before Carter got hurt, was Carter the cut candidate? When Ogunjobi and Michael Hoyt came back, I think there is a world where you just trade AJ Epineza for whatever you can get for him
at this bag of footballs,
ham sandwich, right? Yeah. Like, but there is a world that when Hoyt is ready to come back, there's strong argument that Epineza should not be on the roster.
Yes. Yeah. I agree with that. So we've kind of been all over the map. Do you want to talk about our Lord and Savior, Josh Allen, for a minute?
Yeah.
The offense?
He's awesome. Yeah. I mean, he's so,
What's there to say?
I mean, what else can you really say? I mean, I kind of talked about it a little bit already, like, and again, this is no shade of Joe Brady, but what Josh saw developing on the field, he went with, you know what I mean? And he played, listen, this was there was a lot of stuff in this game where we're like, man, we've been begging the coaches to do some of this, like let the young guys play and maybe some of it too much, well, you know, be careful what you wish for. Mm-hmm. But dude, Josh was playing with pace in this game. I mean, part of it was because they didn't have a lot of clock to work with in the second half and they were down by so much. But like there were points where that Baltimore Ravens defensive line was absolutely gassed. Yep. Josh Allen was going no huddle. He was going quick huddle. He was keeping the pace of the game flowing. And he is at his statistical and performance best when he can operate a quick timing offense like that. We've said it for forever. Yep. Josh is great in all phases of the game, but he's his least effective when he's stuck in the mud for 35 seconds trying to call out checks to his offensive line.
Right.
Yeah. This was Josh literally making quick reads pre-snap and slinging it.
See it, sling it. Bam, bam, bam. Play every 30 or every 24 seconds or less. Like
exactly.
It was that. And that's the, I mean, and a lot of people, I've always, you know, when people are like, oh, you know, why don't they just run that all the time? Like J-gun, you know, I caution people, right? Like, it's like, oh, NFL has changed a little bit since those times. Like, that's not as effective today as you think it would be. But then when that type of thing happens in this game in the last 5 minutes, I'm like, maybe they're on to something, you know?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Because like we've all seen it as Bills fans now for years. When he is in those 2 minute and short operation, you know, windows, he is basically flawless.
He's an
assassin. So it's like, can we do this for a whole game? Like, yes. Could we? But I get it. I get that. I'm it's the same old thing we always say, like how much of it is the coaches holding him back by doing things the way they think they should be doing them? And how much of it is like, oh, well, in pressure times, you can apply turbo, but the tank is not infinite, right? Like, yeah.
Yes. And yeah. I mean, keep in
mind for speed reference. Yeah.
Yes. That's awesome, by the way. Yeah. A little bit of NOS in the conversation.
Yes.
But I mean, also to keep in mind, again, be careful what you wish for. They were doing this when playing behind because they needed to.
Yep.
The Bills using this as a front-running strategy, the quicker they're off the field, the quicker the defense is back on the field. And that's got to factor into some of this equation, too, is why they don't always run that J-gun style no-huddle offense. Like, there's got to be some sort of time of possession strategy because your defense is just not there yet. Just not there yet.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I think that I for the receivers, Keon Coleman with a 100-yard game, touchdown. He looks like he could round into being a absolutely phenomenal wide receiver two in the league, right? Like, I don't think he's ever going to achieve that kind of big-time Justin Jefferson type role where he's going to get 12 to 15 targets every game because he doesn't have that separation ability, but he showed a lot. Like he definitely looked different. I'll say that. He looked different from last year. He looked even better than the best he put on. He looked better than Keon Coleman against the Seahawks, which, you know, is my like bellwether of what is a good Keon Coleman game.
Yes.
He looked better than that. So yeah. I was very, very happy with him there. I think that Khalil Shakir definitely looks like he's got some rust to work off from coming back for this being his first game action. We were both, you know, taking huge mega dumps on Josh Palmer through the first three quarters, but
deservedly so.
Yes, deservedly so, because we're like, oh, what do we spend all this money on for somebody who looks like basically a practice squad talent?
Separation God.
I know. And then he showed out and did some amazing things. And then J- just one more note on offensive talent. I think that James Cook and Dalton Kincaid are going to be major motors in this offense.
Oh, God, yeah.
Both. I mean, James Cook, we knew, and he looked the part, right? And we know he's not a run into the teeth of the defense. And the Ravens defense is, by poundage, one of the biggest in the league. And so it was not going to be easy for him, and it certainly didn't look it. But, you know, some of his catch and run, some of his ways to like squirt through seams that didn't seem there, seemed to be there. That dude is the dude.
Yeah.
And then I think that, you know, a healthy Dalton Kincaid could be really special.
God, you just see it when he catches the ball, like the smooth transition he makes from point of catch immediately into his run. Like, it's just, he looks like a wide receiver out there. It's wild. It's wild. No, I mean, offense, I think, full of bright spots. If the Bills had not been down 40-25, I think we would have been like, man, first week out, Josh hadn't played with the squad, you know, guys battling injuries, 25 points on this Ravens defense and still time to play left in the fourth quarter. That's pretty good, right? I think you're muted.
Shit. All right. Yeah. You have to trim that don't. Leave it. I don't care.
Blooper reel.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That takes. I think we absolutely would have been super happy with them, like integrating some pieces of this offense that we were waiting to see. I struggled, and I think I sent this to you in the text, you know, while we were watching the game, that the Joe Brady like quick whip screens to the outside. That was the Ravens manufacturing the looks they wanted from our offense by knowing how to line up. They basically, they had his number. They're like, okay, if we have this sort of coverage look, Josh Allen's going to check to like the little whip screen to the outside. We're just going to freaking, you know, rally to the ball, tackle them for a loss, rally to the ball, tackle them for a short gain. Next thing you know, it's 3rd and 7 and we can send all our ears back. Right. Like that, they got to figure that out.
I'm
tired of that, because that carried over from last year. That was still happening in the AFC Championship against Kansas City.
Yep. There's a lot of carryover mistakes from last year that I think they needed to iron out.
Yeah.
Again, though, all of that being said, it's a huge benefit that they are 1-0 with a benefit to work on these things and in pole position already in what is sure to be a competitive run for the one seed in the AFC. And they get to work on the mistakes from that position of power, as opposed to being 0-1 with a loss to a direct competitor for that rival, one seed in the Buffalo Ravens.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is huge that the Chiefs lost, Ravens lost to the Bills, and the rest of the AFC East lost.
That's crazy.
Like, it's great. That's the best start you want, and now they have 3 of the next 4 at home.
Exactly, without a doubt. All right, man. Do you want to quickly review our prediction, sure to go wrong, see where we landed?
Yeah, sure. The only one that we had in relation to this particular game was a score prediction.
Which we both sucked.
Yeah, we both were way under. We thought it was going to be under the 50.5, and it ended up being 81 points. So that Vegas was way off. And then Dan picked against the Bills, Ravens 27, Bills 20.
It was like that score in the second quarter.
Yeah, exactly. And then I picked for the Bills with an even lower score of 24-20. At least I got the team right, but we were both, you know, we were almost picking half the points in the game. So, yeah, we were way off. That's okay. We, you know, had some other prop bets that were, you know, set for the whole season. And I think the only one that matters for this game that kind of builds on your you know cachet is that the fifth prop I put out was Dalton Kincaid proves his worth as TE tight end one. You said you think he will, and I said I don't think he will. And just with a one game sample, I think he has so far proven that he's capable of that. So
I would agree. Yep, yeah, I would agree.
We almost skipped probably the most important part, and that is 57-year-old Matthew Prater.
Had that on my bingo card.
Kicking the game winner. I mentioned in like the Bills subreddit that he looks like a you know 50-plus-year-old man who spent way too much for the Halloween party and bought like an illegit NFL jersey and whole outfit, right? Like game worn stuff. Because when he was interviewed after the thing, I was like, That's somebody's grandpa. Is that a player?
Dude, he's our age.
I know.
He's our age.
That's so old for the NFL.
Dude, do you want to know what my wife said to me after we posted the last episode? I put some shorts on Instagram Reels, and one of them popped up in her feed on Instagram, and she's like, oh. I'm like, what? She's like, you and JJ are way too gray to be putting your faces on YouTube.
Well, my brother-in-law. That's
brutal.
That's rough. Yeah. My brother-in-law. What's up, Jim? If he asked me today, he's like, what's the link for your pod, you know, your podcast? I was like, oh, here's the YouTube link. And here's, you know, pod only if it's just audio only. And I was like, if you don't want to look at her ugly mugs, that's probably the better option for you.
Well, I say this to your family and to my wife. You know, over 1,000 views on YouTube will prove you wrong. So there you go. Hey,
somebody wants to look at us, even if it's to mock.
That's right. I assume that's what 99% of it is. Yeah. And then the other 1% arrived at the page by mistake. So there you go.
Yeah. We'll welcome them too. Hello, fellow traveler.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, so glad we decided to settle in and talk about this game, JJ. Yeah. It was a good one. For you folks listening at home, we are dropping this reaction pod here on Monday. We will be back to you with our normally regularly scheduled pod drop on Friday, our pregame preview of Bills versus Jets in Week 2. But until then, for all of you listening at home, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Unfortunately, YouTube, as we have discussed, Apple and Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.